So urgent care is one of the newest specialties in medicine, but what we do isn't actually that new. We see those injuries and illnesses that in the past fell under the care of the general or family practice physician and the emergency departments. But as society changes and the healthcare demands on those two specialties grow, urgent care has developed in order to fill that patient need. And here in New Zealand, we're lucky to have urgent care clinics and, of course, the Royal New Zealand College of Urgent Care. But what about the rest of the world? Now, one place that urgent care is rapidly growing as a specialty is in the United States of America. So it's with great pleasure that I welcome to our podcast today Dr. Josh Russell. Josh is an emergency physician by training, but he also works in urgent care practice, and he is the editor-in-chief of the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine. So welcome to our podcast, Josh.
Guy, so good to be here with you.
Now, we got to talking because obviously urgent care is a growing specialty worldwide, as I said, and you are leading the way over there with the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine in particular, at getting urgent care more recognised as a specialty. But I think a good place to start with is maybe about you yourself, is how did you get into urgent care? What's your background and what was your journey into urgent care?
Well, I think like most people in the States, I got into urgent care sort of haphazardly because there are no dedicated training programs, at least formal training programs in urgent care, the way there are emergency medicine or family medicine training programs. So many people come from other specialties. I actually got into it moonlighting as a resident, or I guess registrar, as your listeners would probably know it. And I thought, because it was the final year of my training, that I would be pretty well set up to deal with urgent care, as I had been dealing with much more acute problems, much more complex patients in the emergency departments. And what I found was that I actually was challenged because it was an entirely different group of patients with a different group of problems. And while there is certainly a lot of overlap in the Venn diagram of the chief complaints, you know, if you looked at the pie chart of the chief complaints of an emergency department and an urgent care, I'm sure there'd be quite a bit of overlap, but the acuity of the patients is less. The expectations of the patient are different. Your resources are probably one of the main things that are different. And so I just found that really a fascinating place to work. And since that time, I've been splitting my time between urgent care and the emergency department, and sort of dovetailed that experience into an associate medical director role that I had previously with this organization that I'm still with. And then work in with the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine and with HIPPO Education and producing some urgent care training and editing their urgent care reviews and perspectives podcast.
So when somebody says to you, you know, what do you do? And you say, I work in urgent care. How do you describe urgent care in America to them? How would you describe what you do and how it differs to an emergency department, for example? How do you draw those differentiators for, you know, a layperson maybe asking you what it is you do?
Yeah, such a good and important question. And there's a lot of confusion that persists in the minds of patients. And some of it is semantic, because if you are speaking colloquially about something, and you want to say something is urgent or something is an emergency, I think those terms, when you're not referring to medical care, are used somewhat interchangeably. But the difference practically for what an urgent care is and what an emergency department is quite significant. If you have a minor illness, in terms of, you know, your wait time if you go to the emergency department, or if you have a serious illness and you accidentally show up in urgent care, their ability to definitively help you. So, we run into a little bit of problem with the language itself. And additionally, urgent care in the States is it's becoming a more codified term, but there are a lot of things that are functionally urgent cares that go by different names, like immediate care, express care, and things of that nature. So you can't blame the patients and public for having a little bit of confusion about the difference between urgent care and the emergency department. But what I would say, to somebody, you know, at a cocktail party would be that the urgent care is a place to go when you can walk in and you don't have severe symptoms. You are pretty sure you have a minor illness or injury, and it offers the advantage of lower cost, certainly significantly lower cost, and also more convenient access to care.
And that's obviously talking about lay people. Do you find that the other healthcare professionals in America have an understanding of urgent care, or is there confusion within the healthcare world as to what it is that you guys do?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The confusion doesn't stop with the lay population in terms of what urgent cares can and can't do. And part of that in the clinical world is that there is such a variability in what the services are that are offered in U.S. urgent care centers. So, you know, some places may have x-ray, some may not, some may be full service in terms of having even CT scanning and ultrasound, full lab capabilities on site. The training of the clinician that you're going to see is going to be variable, whether it's a PA or a nurse practitioner, or it's a, you know, board certified physician of some variety. And the way that sort of manifests itself in urgent care practice is you get people that are sent in. Also, I would add that there are nurse triage lines or after hours sort of advice lines that will say, you know, go to an urgent care, and people will go to an urgent care, but they'll need something like they'll have a Foley catheter issue, and many urgent cares don't have they don't have multiple sizes of Foley catheters on site, so they can't swap out your urinary catheter. Even though it is something that is a relatively low acuity issue, it does require specialized equipment. So that is a common area where I see the confusion being what kind of resources we have available, what kind of specialists we have available. Those, I think, are probably the main areas in which the healthcare community is still figuring out what urgent care is. And I mean, look, you brought this up. Urgent care is rapidly growing. So we're growing between 6 and 8% per year in the U.S. And that means that, you know, compared to 5 years ago, we're 35-40% larger as a community, which is astounding to think about it as, you know, compared to other specialties. So it's not unreasonable to expect that the healthcare community is kind of figuring out who we are and what we can do for their patients or our mutual patients.
It's interesting to hear how you're growing. There was an article in the New Zealand Doctor journal last month, I think it was, that had looked at the numbers here in New Zealand of doctors under training, and urgent care is the fastest growing specialty in terms of trainee numbers here in New Zealand. So it's certainly a worldwide specialty that is growing rapidly, and you would hope, wouldn't you, that the more of us out there, that it will disseminate into both the lay and the healthcare professional understanding of what we actually do. Now, you mentioned just before, you said PA, which I understand is physician assistant, and nurse practitioners. They're obviously part of the urgent care delivery team. What sort of proportion of urgent cares will be staffed by them, and what proportion are purely physician based? And what is there a do you have numbers on that?
Yeah, I actually don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I know that that's the majority of care is delivered by physician assistants, and nurse practitioners are collectively referred to as what are called APPs, or advanced practice providers, and they are delivering the majority of urgent care now. And it's an increasing number because their labor costs are about half of that of a physician, and in their functional role, they basically do the same thing for urgent care. And I mean, it's probably a different discussion about the appropriateness of that in urgent care and what scope of practice and supervision level are appropriate. But I will say that it's the majority, and it is a growing number. And in the U.S. healthcare landscape, because it is a almost universally for-profit sort of environment, the bottom line is always king, and the reimbursement for urgent care services are considerably less, for example, than emergency department care, and so the margins are lower. And if you and labor costs being one of the major, if I think it's, you know, it's the top one or two line items on any budget, it makes a big difference if you cut your labor costs in half by staffing with nurse practitioners rather than physicians.
But am I right in saying that there's no set standard that says this is what an urgent care clinic should be in the States? You've mentioned some have CT scanners and labs and stuff, and some don't. So there isn't an agreed upon standard of this is what an urgent care is when you walk in. Is that right?
Well, so there is no, from a legal standpoint, to put up a panel that says, hey, urgent care here. You don't have to meet any sort of criteria from a licensing, you know, business standpoint. However, the Urgent Care Association, formerly the Urgent Care Association of America, or the UCA, is the largest professional organization for urgent care in the U.S. And also, to a certain extent, in other countries, but mostly in the U.S. And the UCA, which the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine is the actual official journal of, has a credentialing process. And to be credentialed by the UCA as a official urgent care is sort of getting the mark of approval as like certified organic food or something to that effect, meaning it meets these minimum criteria. And those criteria are codified. So the hope is going forward that either legislators will adopt the UCA standards or that it will become better known to other members of the medical community in different areas of the states that you want to make sure that patients, if you're referring patients to an urgent care, you know, quote unquote urgent care, that it's a urgent care that has the UCA or Urgent Care Association stamp of approval because it meets all the criteria of having certain hours, certain on-site capabilities for imaging and services offered for common urgent care needs.
So you mentioned you were emergency trained. Is there a way of training in urgent care through the Urgent Care Association for individual clinicians? Is there a kind of a board certification process? And if not, is it something that's in the pipeline?
Sure. Yeah, there are several different organizations. The one that has endured the most, I think, is the College of Urgent Care Medicine. But there are several other colleges that offer fellowships in urgent care that are not they're not standardized in the same way that fellowship training is in cardiology or gastroenterology. And that has largely to do with recognition by a body in the States called the ACGME or the American College of Graduate Medical Education. So, and the meaning of that or the importance of that is that all the ACGME approved fellowships, of which there are many, I mentioned cardiology and gastroenterology, but there are, you know, spine surgery for orthopedics and things of that nature are included in this group. They receive funding for their fellows through the government. The government has this body called CMS, Center for Medicaid Services, Medicare and Medicaid Services, actually. And so if, for example, when I did my residency in emergency medicine, I was paid a salary, and that salary was not actually a burden to the hospital that I was employed at, but it was actually paid by the federal government. And until a fellowship for urgent care exists that is ACGME approved, that those funds are not available. So that creates an immediate problem because money is always the most pragmatic logistical issue, right? And there have been urgent care fellowships, but they're largely non-profitable. And there's some private urgent care organizations that have 3 to 6 month fellowships for people, whether they be physicians or APPs. But that money has to come from the organization and therefore they can't be that long. The expectation is that you're going to stay on and work with that organization for a period of time. There's often strings attached, understandably. So that's, I think, you know, and I'm sure we're going to get into this later as we talk more about the journal, but I think that's the overarching, one of the reasons why getting specialty recognition from this body, the ACGME, will be important, is because then that opens up the doors for fellowships that are funded in the same way fellowships are in other specialties. Kind of convoluted. It's a very, very convoluted story. I'm sorry. I'm kind of trying, you know, it's a lot for even the U.S. Medical community to kind of wrap their head around, but I'm trying to give you the Cliff's Notes or Reader's Digest version.
I mean, it's certainly developing a new specialty and getting all the recognition. And as you say, there's financial implications, and there's all kinds of other regulatory bodies that all have to come together. And it's not too dissimilar to the journey that the college here went through in getting the similar recognition with our medical council and the like. There's a lot of hoops to go through. And I think the important thing here was that emergency departments have there's a big a reduction in emergency department presentations here that compared to other countries that don't have urgent care facilities. And certainly it's recognized that urgent care clinics are vital, therefore, at providing this service, reducing the burden on the emergency departments, providing after-hours care for general practice patients. So there's a general understanding that there's a need for what we do. Is that appreciated in the States? Is there a recognition that whilst there's a lot of boxes to be ticked and hoops to jump through to get the recognition, that what you do is needed and your population of patients need you and want your services?
I think that's variable. You bring up a great point, and I was speaking to David, you know, the head of your college, about this, and that's such a compelling argument for the need for urgent care and the value that urgent care brings to the medical care delivery environment. Is that in New Zealand, where urgent care has been a recognized specialty for 25 years or so, right? The amount of emergency department presentations has declined and is the lowest really among most of the developed world. So yeah, I mean, in a country where we're spending 18% of our GDP on healthcare, that should be important, and it is, but also the financial incentive system that we have is one still where value is not the highest priority, and it's not rewarded the most. It's more the more you do, the more you get reimbursed. And so while that continues to be the set of incentives, it's hard to make the case globally that urgent care is needed and appreciated. I will say, though, that it has been true, similar to your experience in New Zealand, that the number of emergency department visits, certainly for low acuity conditions, has been going down as urgent care has been growing. And I think the inflection point where urgent care visits for these low acuity conditions surpassed emergency department visits was about 2012. And it continues to go in opposite directions, so that urgent care is seeing the majority of these people. One thing is that from an emergency department standpoint, we see the patients that are referred to us from urgent cares, and there is kind of an attitude of resentment for a lot of patients being sent in for seemingly low acuity things that seem unnecessary in dealing with them when you're taking care of a bunch of other patients in the emergency department. And I think that the emergency department perspective is that these patients are being sort of turfed, and we're seeing more of them in emergency departments because there are more urgent cares, but not necessarily because these patients are being referred inappropriately. And actually, the data that we have, the best data at least, shows that 98% of patients that present to an urgent care can be cared for without needing an immediate emergency department referral. But just the denominator of urgent care visits is going up. So I think the attitude towards urgent cares is is mixed. And certainly as emergency departments are seeing some patients that are seeing more patients sent to them from urgent care, there's a little bit of resentment on their from their perspective, because they're not seeing the patients that are not sent to them, and appreciating that there are actually a lot of low acuity patients that are being cared for definitively in urgent care. You know, I don't have as much perspective from a primary care standpoint, but I know that almost all primary cares are overwhelmed. The number of people going into primary care in the States is going down. And so I think that from the interactions I have had with primary care trained physicians, there is more appreciation from their side, that there is some place that they can send their patients after hours, or they know that their patients can get care without having to go to the emergency department. But also, they also have some concerns about infringement on their turf for primary care needs. So it is an environment where everyone's competing for the people with the best insurance, the patients with the best insurance, and all practice environments are sort of a little bit territorial about keeping their patients and worried that urgent care is growing and that might infringe on their patients.
Yeah, there certainly isn't a clear boundary, is there, between emergency medicine, urgent care, and general practice, that we'll see things in urgent care that the GP could have seen in general practice, or that if they'd walked into an emergency department, they could manage there, and vice versa. And so there's always going to be things that lead a patient to choose to go to one place or another, and that can be convenience and availability, or, you know, if your GP doesn't have an appointment and you need your medication, right, you might walk into an urgent care. Similarly, we get people who walk into us with conditions that probably they should have gone to the emergency department for or called an ambulance for, but we've got to be prepared to manage them and move them on. And there's also going to be that kind of not mistaken referrals, but referrals that an ED might get that will say that could have been managed with you. And similarly, you know, someone might be sent to us from general practice that could have been managed there. And I guess it's easy for us to find examples and highlight those as bad examples of referrals. But generally, I think the system here works. And I would hope that your future of urgent care in the States is a positive one. Do you think it is? Do you see a future for it as a specialty going forwards?
Oh, absolutely. I have no doubt that the future is bright for urgent care. And it's going back to your point of there being a clear patient need. And we wouldn't be increasing the number of centers at a rate of, you know, 7% per year if there weren't patients coming into these centers. They have to be seeing patients to make money. And we're facing a situation where emergency departments are overcrowded. And we're also facing a situation where GPs or primary care providers are overworked and don't have virtually any, squeeze in appointments or immediate visit sort of appointments anymore. And you know, you call your primary care provider in the States and you say, I have ankle pain, I injured my ankle, I want to be seen, they may say, oh, well, we don't have an appointment for 4 to 6 weeks. And that doesn't really do you much good. Additionally, what is commonly referred to as Obamacare, or was officially called the Affordable Care Act, passed, there's been a lot of changes in the health care insurance landscape in the U.S. And people have now these very high deductible plans. So for example, you take a 30-year-old who has no major medical problems and he'll have a $5,000 or $10,000 a year deductible, meaning that he pays for all of his care up until $10,000, which for a 30-year-old, unless something catastrophically wrong happens, is pretty much you're going to be paying for everything out of pocket. So then the question comes to what is it going to cost for you to get the care you need for whatever problem comes up? So if you have an earache and you're 30 years old, you go to the emergency department here, that's going to be on average about $1,000. And the cost of that same visit, where you'll get everything that you need virtually assuredly at urgent care, is about a tenth of that. So it makes sense from a convenience standpoint. It makes sense from a cost to patients standpoint. There's just, you know, from a standpoint of the biology of acute illness and injury, there's a huge proportion, certainly the bulk of it, that doesn't need much care at all other than reassurance and education. And that is what urgent care's bailiwick is those, that large group of patients. So I think if anything, urgent care is going to be the dominant, specialty or care setting for going forward, in terms of people that are presenting to seek an immediate medical opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think certainly the future of urgent care here in New Zealand is set, and it sounds like it is in the States. And you've talked about the training pathways and trying to get those accredited, and hopefully those will all go according to plan. But I'd like to just move now to the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine, which is, as I mentioned, you're the editor-in-chief of it. It's certainly an important thing for a specialty to have a legitimate journal that publishes original work in the field of urgent care. So tell me about the journal and what it does and what your plans for the future of this journal is.
Sure, yeah. The journal is a creation of two physicians that was actually started in Chicago as well. It was about 13 years ago, Dr. Lee Resnick and David Stern. And they got together and kind of recognized this need and created a peer-reviewed journal, which it has remained, and I'm pretty sure among English language journals and urgent care, still the only peer-reviewed journal. It's something that has largely focused for its duration until my tenure, which I've just taken over in 2020, is that it's been focused on some practice management content, and then also some clinical content. And the clinical content is usually takes the form of topic reviews and case reports, which has certainly been important for having a voice for urgent care. To your question about the future of the journal, I think, and the future of urgent care and specialty recognition are all linked together. Because my training is in emergency medicine, I look for historical lessons that can be gleaned from emergency medicine, and its development as a specialty is not actually an incredibly old specialty either in the States, but in order for specialty recognition to be achieved, they really had to focus on developing their own original research and in situ educational programs, with the belief all along that they deserve specialty recognition, that emergency medicine is a specialty. And I think that the same sort of academic transformation can lead to recognition for urgent care as well. So I would like to use the journal, and my plans are to use the journal as that platform. And it would certainly be great to use it internationally in the same way, as to begin to publish original research demonstrating our legitimacy within urgent care as a specialty in its own right. So the plans we have for this year and in the coming months is that we're going to begin publishing original research. There's been a few original research and larger sort of studies other than just case reports that have been published over the preceding years, but it's been sort of few and far between. And we're going to begin publishing with regular cadence original research that's relevant to urgent care. And that will be to the end of applying for and with diligence, I believe, achieving PubMed indexing. And PubMed indexing, actually, when that happens, I think that will be the domino that tips, and hopefully we'll get the rest of the dominoes to fall in fairly predictable succession. Because I know from working in the field and talking to many other people that are working in administrative roles in urgent care that we are doing quality projects and studying outcomes and resource utilization, but without the PubMed indexing, we don't attract as much original research submission as I believe we will when we do achieve that.
So as I mentioned, we've got a growing body of urgent care doctors here in New Zealand. We've got a few in Australia and Ireland and the United Kingdom. And how can they become involved with the journal? How would you encourage them to submit things to you? And if so, how can they go about doing that? And what would you want from them?
Well, I mean, the short answer is absolutely. You know, even though it's just called the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine, I really believe that we need to function as long as we are the only peer-reviewed journal in urgent care as an international journal of urgent care medicine. And as we were talking offline beforehand about Twitter, the more collaboration internationally and across different sorts of healthcare landscapes that occurs, the more creative problem solving for these same issues that we're all facing in our individual countries and practice environments can occur. So, you know, and like I just was referring to in terms of our immediate goals, publishing original research is my top priority this year as the editor in chief. And anybody who's doing any original research, whether that be quality improvement projects or whether it be, you know, to all the way to randomized controlled trials and everything in between, we would love to review those manuscripts and publish them if they are, well done and well written studies. And the means of submitting are to the editor at jucm.com, and that's at least that's how you can reach the editorial staff. But there's guidelines, and we can link to them on your show notes of how to submit a manuscript. But all our manuscripts come to us from people that are doing that kind of work and want to get their message out there to a wider audience. And we have a pretty wide audience. I think our readership is about 30,000 a month at this point between online and print copies, which is a large urgent care audience. And if people are doing research that's solving urgent care related clinical issues within their centers, I'm sure that it will be of value to other people that are trying to solve the same problems. And then that way the specialty can collectively move forward much more quickly.
So this is a call to all the urgent care providers listening, that if you have an interest in publishing original urgent care related submissions, then we'll provide links, as you said, in the show notes. And there is a journal which represents the sort of medicine that we do. And as that journal grows, the hope is that the training programs will continue to grow, and that recognition, like you say, in mirroring the development of the emergency medicine pathway, will have urgent care recognized as an independent specialty in the States, hopefully in the not too distant future. So I would encourage everybody to check out the Journal of Urgent Care Medicine. And Josh, you mentioned Twitter there. In terms of yourself, you're active on Twitter, providing little nuggets of urgent care relevant information. Where would people find you if on Twitter?
Sure. You can put my Twitter handle in the show notes, but it's pretty easy. It's at UC Practice Tips. We were talking, Twitter is a really helpful platform similar to podcasting and the rest of what's collectively referred to as, you know, FOAM or FOMED world. It allows these dialogues to occur, and not necessarily that this is going to be held at the same standards as peer-reviewed research, but it's something that allows for collaborative discussion and sharing small things that are easily digestible in terms of tips that you can use on your next shift. We were talking about the fish hook tweet, you know, something as small as that, or a nugget like one I posted a little while ago was something that changed my practice. Was it for patients where you're considering cauda equina syndrome, if you can get a post-void residual of less than 100 cc's in their bladder, then that is 100% sensitive for excluding cauda equina, which is a pretty cool little thing. And so things of that nature are the types of tips that I try to post, and certainly welcome the dialogue that follows in terms of how people see eye to eye or don't. But it's a great complementary platform for keeping your clinical practice advancing as you go through your career.
And you mentioned at the start of this talk, the HIPPO education, you do things with them. People can find you through the HIPPO education platform as well.
Sure. Yeah. The HIPPO family of products is really pretty diverse and expansive now, ranging from pediatrics to emergency medicine, urgent care, primary care. I work with their urgent care products. We put together an urgent care bootcamp sort of to fill that need that the Urgent Care Association is actually also accrediting for continuing education. And that is trying to fill that gap that many of the U.S. urgent care owners and administrators are finding, where they're hired, you know, they need to staff these urgent cares and they don't know how to verify that the people that are working in them are competent. And because there's no dedicated training programs or board certification, this sort of process functions at least as a temporary surrogate until something more formal and codified is able to be developed. And then we have the Urgent Care Wrap podcast, which is a CME product that we release every month. And that is a product that I'm an editor on. And usually a lot of the pearls I share are things that have come up either from editing the journal. The pearls I share on Twitter, at least, are the pearls I come across editing the podcast and the journal.
So, Josh, I'd like to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us down here in New Zealand about urgent care in America and how it's growing, and about your plans for the future of the journal. I think it's important, given that we're a small community of, albeit a rapidly growing community of clinicians working in this area, that we collaborate and talk and learn and grow from each other. And I hope that people listening here in New Zealand are interested to hear how similar urgent care is in the States and how you're going through that same process of recognition and growth as we are here. And knowing that there's a community and it's growing, and that this is a really viable career and future, maybe those people who listen who aren't urgent care trained will consider becoming urgent care trained, because they can see a future career that's filled with work opportunities and educational and this kind of collaborative world that we've talked about that exists in Twitter and the podcast world and online in general. So I think it's an exciting career. It's a career I'm very happy with, and I'm thrilled that you're leading the way in America at pushing it forward. So I'd like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us, and I'm sure we will hear from you again in the future.
Absolutely. I mean, this has been my pleasure, and I think I can just put in a plug for urgent care the same as you. It's a very rewarding career. You get to interact with a lot of people with diverse backgrounds. You get to be a true clinician, because you're not ordering as many tests as you would be in other environments, and every day is a new day. And I just wanted to say, if anyone wants to comment on anything today that we discussed, it's probably best to reach out to me through Twitter. Again, that's I'm at UC Practice Tips. And one final plug and offer that I wanted to extend to your listenership is that we are accepting applications at the journal right now for anyone who's gotten bend towards evidence-based medicine for our section editor position in the abstracts in urgent care. And that's a section that we've had for many years. That is one of the most popular sections, because there is so little primary research in urgent care that is a summary of six or seven abstracts per month that are relevant to urgent care providers that are gleaned from other related journals, whether it be pediatrics or orthopedics or whatever the case may be. So if you have interest in being a part of the editorial team and being a section editor for that abstracts, the best way to reach out to us is through editor@jucm.com. And indicate your interest and we can talk further about what that position entails. But certainly love the idea of having an international team of contributors and building global urgent care together.
That's fantastic. So thank you again, Josh. And I've no doubt we will be hearing from you again. It's much appreciated. Take care.
Okay. Thanks, Guy.